Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
Many sights to see, and when I look in my window, so many different people to be, that it's strange, so strange. You got to pick up every stitch. You got to pick up every stitch. Mm-hmm. Must be the season of the witch. Must be the season of the witch, yeah. Must be the season of the witch. Head looking over his shoulder at me, and he's strange, sure is strange. You got to pick up every stitch. You got to pick up every stitch, yeah. Beatniks out to make it.
Must be the season of the witch. Season of the Witch. That's what we've just been listening to, and neatly turning around to the welcome return of an awesome author of the week who's actually brought her friend with us this time around. Yes, of course, we spoke back in July to Meg Halfdahl. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive, Meg. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for having me again.
Oh, it's always vitally important. And you already teased ahead to the notion that you were going to do the science of witchcraft when you spoke to us. And what was kind of a Johnny Cash special, actually, because we had a couple of Johnny Cash numbers that were being worked through that. And of course, we also revealed the origin story of how it was a shared love for the X-Files that bonded you with our newbie today. Of course, we're here, Debbie, as far as the Midweek Drive Author of the Week feature is concerned. That's the terrific Kelly Florence. How are you, Kelly?
Good. Thank you so much for having us.
Well, great to connect, as we said. Just confirming Meg's line when we spoke in July, was it literally that X-Files connection that kind of led to this awesome, almost media empire of podcasts and more?
Absolutely. I was wearing an X-Files t-shirt. She said, I like your shirt. We talked about the X-Files, exchanged emails as you did in the day, and the rest is history.
Yeah. There you go. Great stuff here. So let's move on to the current line, though, because the science of witchcraft. Now, clearly, what we're doing now might have been back in the day, and I'm talking probably mid-20th century here, perceived as witchcraft. I could have been burnt at the stake as a warlock, probably. But, you know, there's all sorts of things here. Talking to voices from beyond, claiming we can actually see somebody from that perspective, actually having that connection. Although, to be fair, Kelly did take a couple of times to actually hear me speaking to her. But it's all right. It's all good. Meg, talk us through why this whole notion, which obviously follows through in the Science Of series that you've been producing, but the science of witchcraft, was this something which was already percolating under the creative geniuses for yourself?
Definitely. One of our favorite books to write was The Science of Women in Horror, and we touched on witches, and we touched on witches in our other books as well, Science of Monsters, but there's just so much there and so many types of witches, and not just in media, but in real life, and there's such a history, a rich history all over the world in different cultures. It was just like a natural to go right to witchcraft when we were crafting our next book.
Kelly, obviously you're an author, screenwriter, podcaster. We've already spoken about Science of Monsters, the Science of Women in Horror, the Science of Stephen King, the Science of Serial Killers. Now, this Science of Witchcraft, as a co-writer from that perspective, was this again something which you also had thought that, yeah, we're gonna go to this. We're gonna actually talk through the whole process of how the science can underpin this whole aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, coming from our last book, The Science of Serial Killers, this was a nice shift because all of that book was very heavy, obviously dealing with real victims, real serial killers. And this week, it was not that there weren't horrific things that we wrote about what women went through in the past, but sometimes it was a little bit lighter. We got to talk about fun things like we spoke to an indigenous ethnobotanist about how plants can really heal, and they've been healing for centuries. And so it was like a nice light take on some subjects, and it was refreshing.
Meg, there's an old quote by Arthur C. Clarke that I often trot out at such times, which is any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Is that something which kind of you also had at your basis? Because again, you can use that to say, well, then does that mean that Harry Potter is a science fiction fable?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's so cool. And I think that, you know, we are living in the time of, it doesn't even feel real how technology has changed our lives. And even as research writers, I have basically every article at my fingertips, and I'm able to read, you know, old texts that normally I would have never got my hands on. So yeah, I think that this idea that witchcraft is both real in our lives and not real is what made this book unique. You know, because obviously when you're talking about something like a vampire, you know, it doesn't have the same depth and gravity that witchcraft does, because it's real. It's real. And in just varying different ways of how we sort of perceive it. And I just love that.
Hollywood's had an awful lot of fun over the last couple of centuries with respect to witches and so on. We can go to, obviously, the Wicked Witch of the East, the Wicked Witch of the West. I mean, you know, if you've got a house dropped on you, you're going to react negatively. It's a bottom line, you know, it's going to happen. But obviously, you've got the whole notion of L. Frank Baum scenario. You've clearly got, as we came into this, the whole essence of the medieval approach to witches. Clearly, the United States can proudly hang up the Salem witch trials. I say proudly in an ironic sense there. But, you know, there are all sorts of other areas that are being put together within this whole field. And certainly this side of the Atlantic, we've had the whole essence of witch finders and areas relating to that. Kelly, just share with us your own thoughts in terms of how the narrative has progressed within that, because you've got the whole essence of Wicca. You've got the whole notion of good magic. You've got bad magic. You've got all sorts of other areas within that and lots of shades in between. Is it just cases of, you know, ignorance can lead to fear, can lead to persecution, can lead to death? Is it that kind of narrative that we have sadly progressed over the centuries?
Yeah, absolutely. We learned in our research, and we knew this just through movies and TV shows that we've seen, that as soon as men historically started to learn that the women were primarily healing and taking care of other women, whether as midwives or healers, and it was like, well, this can't be right. This must be magic. Or as soon as a woman started to use her own independence and dominance in any sort of way, well, she must be hysterical. She must be a witch. And so it was that fear of women gaining power in any sense of the word that did lead to fear. And so anytime anybody is othered, then something must be wrong. And that was a really interesting journey to research for this book.
And science in general, of course, has had its challenges in terms of how we actually perceive what, as we said, to some people might be a case of, well, that's science. We know how we understand this. Or to others that say, well, the gods are angry with us. Clearly, we haven't actually appeased the goddess, and therefore we've got this reaction. Is that something which, again, also permeates through the perspective? Because, I mean, you know, there's the kind of Halloween sense of the witch, and there's the kind of and then, of course, you've got, I suppose you could say, let's not negate the onset of Bewitched, the onset of a whole range of Hollywood aspects related to Sabrina, the teenage witch, a whole range of other areas with respect to that. Is that also something which, again, just shows the breadth of how actually witches have had diversity long before it was even popular?
Yes, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, just in doing the research, obviously, like you were talking about the evil witch in Wizard of Oz, and then there's Glinda the Good Witch. And so this dichotomy of perfection and using it for good and healing, and then this evil witch, you know, we talked to the filmmakers of a movie called The Wretched, which is a really great horror film, and the witch in that is just evil and horrible. And again, it's sort of taking these two tropes and sticking witches in either one of them. And I love the idea that it's more complicated than that in real life. And, you know, when Kelly researched and interviewed that ethnobotanist she's talking about, you know, this is about real women using nature, using the power of manifestation, using things that can help them spiritually. And it's such a neat way to look at it from science, but also filmically, and also just as a woman, there's so many different aspects. And you're right, it's diversity in the best way before it was popular. Yes, for sure.
Two major inserts in terms of filmic lore, of course, in the 90s were, for various reasons, The Witches of Eastwick, in which you could arguably say, well, wasn't that just a kind of Jack Nicholson vehicle to enable Cher and others to actually sort of share in the whole fun of the whole system? And of course, the Blair Witch Project, which personally I never really kind of really bought into the whole notion of found footage and the movie itself. I don't know. But you've got the two extremes there, in essence, between the slick Hollywood product and the found footage genre and the whole notion of witches, etc. I suppose you could actually draw a parallel, dial back a bit more. You've got Hansel and Gretel and their encounter with somebody who's never actually identified as such as being a witch. Maybe she just liked to actually have sweets around our house and occasionally chew on children. I mean, I think it was W.C. Fields who once said he loved children, honestly, but he couldn't eat a whole one. Well, that was W.C. Fields. So there you go. But going back to that line, Kelly, in terms of, again, the representation that we see in the media and particular Hollywood, because I mean, ultimately that is a very dominant ideology. Is that something which, again, you've noticed over the years? Because we talked at the start about the X-Files. Now, the X-Files didn't really deal as such with witchcraft. It was certainly the unknown. It was the unexpected. It was the uncanny. But it didn't really kind of delve into that whole side of things.
You know, it's something that we realized rewatching these movies or these TV shows and looking at the origin stories of these witches. Sometimes you realize, oh, they're being evil or getting revenge, and it's justified in a way because you learn their backstories and what it doesn't excuse it, but it explains their behavior and what happened to them. Maleficent is an example. Growing up watching her in the cartoon, it's like she's a bad witch. But then you see the modern adaptations of Angelina Jolie, and it's like, oh, she was treated very poorly, and truly she had good intentions, but she was misunderstood.
I mean, you mentioned the D word. You have dropped it, of course, with respect to Disney and the corporation and so on with respect to that. I mean, Meg, is it a case of, well, Walt was simply kind of adapting famous folklore tales and the Brothers Grimm and other areas had to work through that? Or was he also, in some sense, also buying into this whole sense of stereotypes, because narrators love stereotypes? I mean, we kind of, from an academic point of view, would say avoid stereotypes, look at archetypes, etc. Not that I'm promoting Megan's latest podcast, because that's another line entirely. And besides, nothing that Megan could do could be a match for Kelly and Meg's podcasts. I'm just saying, in case Spotify are actually realizing they want to kind of readdress the deal somewhat. But what about that whole sense of how we see witches portrayed, and in particular, the Disneyfication of witches?
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, it was really easy to take, you know, Snow White and to take, you know, the evil witch. And again, it's those tropes. It's how we want to see women. It's how they're portrayed, especially in the era of, you know, in that era, where there's the innocent girl and then there's the evil witch and there's nothing really in between. And I think what we've been trying to do with our witchcraft book is really focus on the in-between, which is, you know, the real women who are affected by historical, just the cruelty. And then also in media, finding the witches, like Kelly said with Maleficent, you know, now that we're getting to a point where it's like, oh, wait a minute, maybe we don't want to have these two really obvious tropes. Maybe we want to go somewhere in the middle and find complicated women. And why are they drawn to witchcraft? And why do, you know, young women watch the movie The Craft and they want to be witches? There's so much there. And Disneyfication, I mean, it kind of made us all grow up with that sort of like dichotomy when it's so much more complicated than that.
Human beings as a species have had this tendency to panic at, one might say, the least thing. But if we actually look, and we cited it in the early part of this particular discussion, we look at the Salem witch trials, and we look at the panic that was set up there. We look at the sense that if you happen to be of the female gender and you happen to live alone and you're of a certain age, you know, basically you could be identified as a witch. You know, this calling out, this almost variation really on the McCarthy. I mean, you know, we use the term McCarthy witch hunts back in the 1950s. Is it something which has just been part of the patriarchy that people have wanted to kind of other the whole system and actually say, well, you know, if you're going to try and mess with us, we're going to try and throw some manure at you and some of it will stick, and therefore we can build on that? Is it as easy as that? Because unfortunately, we often see a large number of, I mean, if we look at the Salem witch trials, we see an awful lot of people go along with that and actually say, yes, denounce so-and-so, etc. That's what I say. Is it a human thing? Is it a patriarchal thing? Any thoughts, Kelly?
Yeah, I think I teach communication, and something that we as humans tend to do, we will go along with the easy choice, almost what we're being told, because it's easier to follow than to critically think. And so a lot of times people will get swept up in that chaos or that fear because it's being shown to you in front of you. Whereas thankfully now, as we learn more about how our brains work, how critical thinking works, hopefully we can step back and realize it's not one or the other. As Meg said, we are all complicated. We're not just good or evil. We're all somewhere in between, hopefully better good than evil, but more good than evil. But you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
And this is an interesting point, Meg, because the whole phenomenon of witchcraft and witchery and so on, in cosmological terms, seems to have been, from my reading at least, relatively recent. We're talking 400, 500, 600 years. I mean, I don't think if we go back to, you know, the Druids, we go back to the Wiccans, we go back to, there wasn't really an issue there. I mean, is it almost a case of somehow this balance between, I mean, okay, you can go back and say you have a very ecclesiastical approach, and certainly Galileo was nearly excommunicated for daring to say that the Earth might actually progress around the Sun rather than vice versa. Copernicus managed to be a bit more political with respect to things with that. But is it a case of, you know, at one level, it's this whole notion of it's a dominant ideology that sees it, its position being challenged, and therefore will call out somebody and say, this is witchcraft.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why, you know, the Salem witch trials really sticks out, because of it being, again, other compared to the Puritan ideals. And I think, yeah, I mean, you're right. Druids, Wiccans, for centuries, people did things that were considered witchcraft. And it was okay within that community. But I think as science, even in its little infancy, I think, and also men, and not just men, because, you know, in again, the Salem witch trials, women, because they lived in a patriarchal society, were agreeing with the ideals and saying, yeah, like, we have to get these people out. It's bad. And it was, you know, woman against woman sometimes. But again, it's because of that patriarchy. But I think that the sort of ideals that the Puritans had, and obviously it happened in Europe as well, it started to really, I don't know, I guess just make that other. And it's a shame, because there's so many great things that can come out of witchcraft, and which sounds like, oh my gosh, but if you really distill it down, it's such a love of nature and healing and many maternal and feminine sort of energy things that got squashed. And I'm so glad we have in our little part in writing this book and sort of lifting it back up again.
Kelly, was that an objective you had right at the start, to actually, I mean, from a communications point of view, give a different balanced story in terms of this? Because, as I say, the initial notion when you read it, you think, well, surely this is a contradiction in terms. This is almost oxymoronic insofar as you've got the science of witchcraft. You've got two apparent polarized thoughts there, and yet you're putting things together. I mean, I appreciate that the science of is a well-worn brand that we've talked about at length and worked through that. But was that something you actually had as an initial objective?
Yeah, absolutely. Something that we've talked about, we mentioned manifestation. It sounds very magical and kind of woo-woo. Like, how could you actually make things a reality? But when we start to learn the science behind positive thinking, journaling to work towards goals, it's simply an act that helps you work towards those goals. It's not magically going to appear the next day, but that act and positive thinking and working towards it will make things happen. It's the self-fulfilling prophecy in a positive way.
Meg, got to ask the question. Did you have any favorite witches? And are there any sort of individuals that you thought, yeah, if we don't actually feature Sabrina at least once in the session, or Willow from Buffy, then frankly, I just don't want to be part of this whole connection.
Oh, yeah. you know, I probably would have raised a stink if I couldn't talk about, I'm a huge Shirley Jackson fan, and I love the book We've Always Lived in the Castle. And it's kind of that aspect of witchery I absolutely love. I also learned a lot about hoodoo, and we talk about Eve's Bayou, the film, and that was a huge sort of learning curve for me. So there were definitely movies like Witches of Eastwick we had to do, but then there were movies that I learned so much from and ended up going down these amazing rabbit holes. So it was a great experience.
And you mentioned, of course, the Haitian notion and this whole sense of Baron Samedi and the voodoo religion in New Orleans and areas with respect to that. I mean, again, culturally, that has a huge connection with not only societies, but also the whole French experience and a native population experience of the Deep South. I mean, was that something, Kelly, where, again, There's a wealth of information there that you know that whole notion of how we see the voodoo connections within that, which you know, many folk would actually initially from a very white Anglo-centric perspective initially want to pour scorn on. Suddenly there are beliefs and aspects which possibly tie into your own thoughts about manifestation. Whatever you can conceive can actually manifest.
Yeah, definitely. And we've learned that, you know, it's not just that Wicked Witch of the West with the pointy hat. There are iterations of witches throughout the world in every culture. And so to uplift those voices and those stories and that history is so important so that people aren't thinking about just in terms of black and white of it's one or the other. And there's so many iterations. And it was really important to write about a variety of movies and TV shows.
I've always had a fondness, to be honest, for Belinda Montgomery's iteration of Samantha in Bewitched. I'll go on record and say that, you know, it's the way forward. And in particular, Agnes Moorehead's incarnation of the mother-in-law, which I thought also was very important for that one of you. But Kelly, Meg's already shared with us her particular favourite. Did you have any areas which you thought we need to actually focus on this particular character?
You know, you mentioned it, Willow in Buffy. Buffy is one of my favorite TV shows of all time. And I wanted to focus on the musical episode in particular, because I love a good musical number. And the path that it led me down was very interesting, because in that episode, Willow's suffering from memory loss. And so we actually interviewed somebody who did have amnesia, ended up canceling her wedding weeks before because she could not remember her fiance, but he wooed her and they fell back in love and they got married. So it's a very happy ending.
In other words, did they quite literally get the mustard out?
They got the mustard out.
They got the mustard.
It's a musical reference. If you're familiar with that particular Once More With Feeling episode, you'll appreciate it. They got the mustard out. let's talk music. We've moved on to that. I mean, on Meg's debut of the production, we obviously featured Johnny Cash extensively, but are there any musical aspects you'd like us to bring in for your debut, please, Kelly, that you think, yeah, we need to work through that? I mean, we mentioned we've done Donovan and Season of the Witch. We can go down a witch line if you wish, but there can be another artist as well. What would you like?
I love musical theater in general. So obviously Stephen Sondheim has been on my playlist lately since his passing this past year. Give me a good musical number. I'm in.
We'll go with some Stephen Sondheim. I'm thinking you're really Into the Woods. We want something from Into the Woods, perhaps. Meryl Streep from Into the Woods. And again, working through that, we'll go there.
What you say, children won't listen. No matter what you know, children refuse to learn. Guide them along the way, still they don't listen. Children can only grow from something you love. Something you lose.
You're listening to Author of the Week. It's on Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and, of course, Southside Broadcasting. We've got the fabulous authors, Kelly Florence and Meg Halfdahl, with us. I mean, Meg, you already teased ahead back in July to the fact that you're working on an Agatha Christie science-off, which is very exciting, and we're looking forward to go with that. What sort of stage is that? And we're not saying Agatha Christie was a witch, but it's interesting, isn't it? Agatha Harkness. There is a connection there as well, with witchcraft perhaps.
Yeah. Breaking news. We have evidence that Agatha Christie was a witch. Just kidding. but, you know, in a way she was, because she created such amazing characters, and we're having a blast writing this book. Kelly, so, you know, just like any duo, one of them is more organized than the other. So that's Kelly, and she's way ahead of me in her work. That's how it always is. So I'm playing catch up, but I'm enjoying it. And I'll read Agatha Christie. I just watched a version of Death on the Nile. I think it was the 2004 version yesterday. So any excuse to enjoy Agatha.
And Kelly, is this something from your own perspective that you're also a keen Christie watcher?
Yes. Well, you know, and I just yesterday, or 2 days ago now, finished the chapter on the Pale Horse, which involves witchcraft, if you're familiar. And just how much research she did into real things that were happening in witchcraft at the time, and also the perspective of what was happening in pop culture and how the world viewed witchcraft at that time. It's fascinating. So I can't wait for everybody to read it.
It's all coming to the fore. Okay, let's move back to the science of witchcraft, the truth behind Sabrina, Maleficent, Glinda, and more of your favourite fictional witches. Let's talk a little bit more. I mean, we've touched on this to a certain extent about how witchcraft's been thought of throughout the world. Did you find that there were any key areas that maybe, say, cultures which... And I don't like to use the term primitive, because I think it's got lots of anthropological baggage to actually work through that. But cultures which perhaps hadn't gone down a more technicist line became more concerned with witchcraft? Or was it a case of, to a certain extent, maybe an inverse proportionality? The more technical society became, the more things were explained, then the more fear there was with respect to something like witchcraft, and fear as in false expectations appearing real. Kelly, do you want to take that?
Yeah, I think definitely with the advent of medicine and medicine in the scientific sense, that men were getting trained and women were being excluded, even though women perhaps knew more in certain fields than the men did. It was all of a sudden, well, any of that must be witchcraft, and they were excluded. And so I think anytime science is coming into it, even though it could have been explained by science, that fear started coming in, and that's when witches started getting blamed and persecuted.
There's a whole debate we could actually have about Big Pharma and how that could be seen as another sort of aspect with respect to not the best way to actually progress, but we won't go down there. So, you know, we appreciate that. But Meg, again, looking towards that side of things, did you come across any surprises in the research for this, or were there any areas which you thought, I wasn't aware of that particular aspect?
Well, I mean, I think that something that surprised me was that, you know, there is still a fear. You know, I come from living in America and seeing witches and knowing that, you know, there are fake witches in media. And then there are women and men who practice any type of sort of witchcraft. But there are cultures in which there is still a fear of witches. And there are people still to this day being executed and killed, which is hard to believe. You know, talking to you through this technology and everything, that people still feel this way. So I think for me, knowing that this wasn't something that's just in the past, but it's still something that's being experienced in certain cultures, that's pretty scary.
And of course, there is the counterbalance, which I'm sure folk would be saying, and Kelly might want to comment on this as well, that regularly the media does run stories which, you know, are factually correct. It would seem that there are rituals, that there are ritual killings, there are areas related to that, often tied into children, tied into other sort of areas within that whole field. And that certainly can't help, shall we say, the PR image of witches in the 21st century.
Yeah, it's an easy thing to run to and blame is occult things and witches. And we've learned that through our research of the science of serial killers, that it's easier to blame a horrific act on a group of people or a belief rather than maybe the real science or the reasons behind what was going on. And so I think that that's a really important part of the critical thinking is let's look at this case and not just label it, it's witchcraft.
From the academic perspective, you use a number of analyses in terms of both film, literary analysis, and indeed interviews as well from that perspective. Was that a methodology you set out because actually it's proven to be highly successful in a whole range of other elements within that? Or was it something which actually it works well? Because I mean, it's fair to say it's not an academic book, but it is an interesting book in terms of the way in which you'd want to find out more. So, I mean, again, I'm interested, Kelly, from your academic perspective, was that a kind of conscious decision that you didn't want to have focus groups, you didn't want to have ethical approval forms to go through a whole range of other factors, you just wanted to actually get the narrative out there, really?
Yeah. And I know that we both, before we even started writing our first book, knew what would we like to read and how would we like to approach that research and not have it be so overly academic that it's not fun. And we want to insert our own voices and other people's voices through these interviews and not just interview scientists, but filmmakers and people who have a wide range of knowledge so that we're learning, we're teaching the audience along with ourselves and it's not so heavy that you can't read a chapter before you go to bed at night.
Well, we certainly talked at length about the science of women in horror. There's also the science of Stephen King, the science of serial killers, the science of monsters and so on. And we did actually discuss a little bit, I think, with Meg in the first interview about the importance of, and the very, perhaps some might say, still underrated importance of Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley in terms of this whole process. Mary Shelley, of course, who kicked off in many ways the contemporary genre of science fiction. Kelly, do you think there's an argument for saying maybe Kelly was actually summoning forces from the darkness? Maybe she was actually sort of wearing her witchy hat as well?
Absolutely. We consider her the founder of horror, modern horror. And I think it was just brilliant, her storytelling and calling out the things that we've been talking about, science and the patriarchy and men, thinking that they have control and can take over these bodies and do whatever they wanted. It was such a clever way of creating horror, but also getting to the truth and the heart of the matter.
Let's talk to about another little aspect you put together, of course, because you're also known, Kelly, for the podcasts Horror Rewind and Be a Better Communicator. Sure was critical from that line of things there. The podcast itself, it's coming up to 20 years old. There's an academic conference actually taking place, I believe, later on next year that actually focuses on 20 years of podcasting and so on. Is it something which enables us to, as we've just done today, change some of the conditions and rather than actually say, no, you've got to get all your entire plug into 22 seconds, otherwise that's it, we're off, and you can actually sort of have more of a discussion for the whole thing. What are your views on podcasts, Kelly?
Yeah, I think it's a great way to reach people in this medium and format where you can listen to a podcast anywhere. You can be doing anything. You can be on a walk. You can be at work. You can be going to bed at night and you're learning something, whether it be just about the human condition with a conversation or very technical things. I think it's a great medium.
And Meg, obviously, it's a delight to feature your good self from that particular perspective, which is all great. Meg, how can people actually get hold of the science of witchcraft?
It's pretty much everywhere. Amazon, of course. Support your local bookstore. And, you know, if it's not there, ask for it and they can order it. It's at Barnes & Noble, which, you know, we use here in America. And it's pretty much everywhere. So you'll stumble across it.
And in terms, Kelly, of the adventures of Kelly and Meg, surely it's going to happen, you know, from that point of view. how can people actually keep abreast of the fantastic work that you're putting together?
So follow us on social media. We are both on social media under our names, Kelly Florence and Meg Hofdahl. And then you can also follow us on Horror Rewind, which is our duo account for our podcast and all things the science of horror.
We must do a joint package with Resonance Rewind, which is our weekly show when we look at a cult episode of Things Times Past. Maybe you should join us for when we do the Buffy the Vampire Slayer piece, Kelly.
Yes.
Awesome from that point of view. But let's wrap up with two questions. Meg, you possibly remember what they were, so we'll come to you first. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting session with us, a Zoomer, as we refer to them? Has it been a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
Oh, my gosh, yes. My favorite part is when you said Media Empire. I loved it.
You know, as I said, it's a. I predicted you'd soon be picking up a Bram Stoker Award, Meg, for your horror writing. So, you know, that's still out there. It's still sort of working on that basis. And Kelly, what about yourself? Has it been a reasonable debut? Have you enjoyed your debut Zoomer with us on the program today?
Absolutely. Spike is my favorite character in Buffy. I know he's not British, but I could listen to your accent all day.
Well, there you go. I mean, of course, the whole point about the characterization of Spike was, yes, he was meant to be British. It was just a case of, you know, James was channeling his inner Dick Van Dyke, perhaps. I don't know. Just another line. So, Kelly, will you be kind enough to return? Will you come back sometime?
Absolutely.
And Meg, needless to say, the invitation to open it to your good self. Will you return as well?
Oh, I would love to. Thank you.
Meg Halfdahl and Kelly Florence, authors extraordinaire. Keep on keeping on and just be happy.
Awesome.
The fire and it freezes me. I look into it and it's black. Why can't I feel my skin should crack and peel? I want the fire back. Now through the smoke she calls to me to make my way across the floor. Save the day. Buffy's laughing, I've no doubt. I hope she fries. I'm free if that bitch dies. I better help her out, 'cause she is drawn to the fire. Some people she will never learn, and she will. Am I leaving Dawn in danger? Is my slayer too far gone to care?
What if Buffy can't defeat it?
Beady eyes is right where needed. Or we could just sit around and glare.
We'll see it through. It's what we're always here to do. So we will walk through the fire.
So one by one they turn from me. I guess my friends can't face the cold.
What can't we face?
But why I froze, not one among them knows, and never can be told.
She came from the grave, much graver.
First he'll kill her, then I'll save her.
Everything is turning out so dark.
No, I'll save her, then I'll kill her.
These endless days are finally ending in a blaze,
and we are caught in the fire, the point of no return. So we will walk through the fire and let it burn.
Let it burn. We'll be right back.